to the King. Hello, podcast listeners. My name is Kelly Richardson Lawson. I'm a mother, a wife, and an entrepreneur. I started the Sunrise Project after our beautiful teenage son attempted to take his own life.
Truth is, I'm tired.
My husband and I felt despair, isolation, and immeasurable pain. I knew in my heart we needed a place for Black parents to share their struggles, find mutual support, and help our beloved children who struggle with mental wellness, addiction, or both. Each weekly podcast features an expert who shares their knowledge and takes questions from parents and children.
Take me to the King. I don't have much to bring.
The Sunrise Project allows Black families, like ours, to find comfort in knowing that we are not alone. While the purpose of the Sunrise Project is to share, support, and uplift, this conversation is not a substitute for medical advice. Finding the right healthcare professional for your family's specific needs is crucial. If you do not feel seen or heard, you should speak to more than one professional to find the right fit.
Take me to the King.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our weekly Sunrise Project call. Once again, as always, we are here to find a moment of solace and peace while we learn and build and grow with one another in a safe space filled with love, compassion, and a mutual desire to heal ourselves, our children, and our families. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We have back with us my husband and father, Keith Lawson. We are lucky to have him here. He is an amazing, amazing father. And he is here to share his journey and his story of being the father of two Black sons, two incredible sons, and how he has learned to really embody and live that serenity prayer that I say every Sunday. Keith is a proud Baltimore native. He's a graduate of the University of Maryland, and he's a 30-plus year veteran of BET Networks and the music industry. We met in 1999 when we were both at BET. We've been together ever since. And what I want to just share is that Keith is an incredible father and is the opposite of what media would have us believe to be true about Black men and Black fathers. So I am super happy and grateful for you and for you being here with us today. And please share whatever you'd like to share this day in terms of life as a serenity prayer and how you have pivoted from accepting and changing yourself versus trying to change our sons. So thank you for being here.
Awesome. Thank you for that wonderful intro. The subject today, life as a serenity prayer, is a great title. Learning that we can do what we can do as parents and as fathers, certain things, no matter how hard we try to control, we're not in control of. And we definitely need the strength to be able to understand which things we are in control of, which things God's in control of, and then what we can do in the midst of all of this. So one of the things that I see here is a really nice mug that my wife and kids gave me that says, life doesn't come with an instruction book. And that's why we have fathers. I don't know about the second part, but you know, we're here. The life doesn't come with an instruction book part though is so true. It's just, we do what we think is the best thing that we can do for our family and for our kids. And, you know, we don't know what things are going to come up. We don't know how this journey that we're on and, you know, these things that we deal with as parents affect the rest, you know, of our family. So you may have one child that's, you know, visibly struggling, but you don't know how it's affecting the rest of the family, like the impact on it, because nobody goes through this alone. Okay, so, you know, we are concerned that, you know, our younger one is not really finding an outlet to have his voice heard and is starting to go through things that we are concerned about and worried that is a direct result of what we've been dealing with. But let me back up this story to me, why am I having this conversation and why we here today? As Kelly mentioned, I am from Baltimore. I am, you know, one of five siblings. I have two older sisters, an older brother, and a younger sister. My experience as a child growing up in Baltimore is, for the most part, one of, you know, a statistical regularity, which is growing up in a Black household with just a single parent, being mother, being raised by mother raising five kids on her own. You know, as I was thinking about fathers, one of the things that I remember about my dad when I was growing up, in the brief time that we were together, because my parents had a, let's say, troubled time with kids and family and the marriage thing and all of that. My dad was difficult and frustrated, and as I come to find later, feeling a bit overwhelmed with the whole family thing. He had his eyes on a dream that didn't come true. And then he tried to do what he thought was the best thing to do, which is, I'm just going to shut it down and do what I need to do for my family. That in turn turned into some regret and tense moments of him feeling, you know, resentful of what he had to deal with as a father, as opposed to being out on the road as a musician. He was close to having a big music deal or whatever, and ended up having to stay home and raise his first child, my older brother. Point of all of that is, as we ended up in a situation where it got to be a struggle, where he got to be, you know, I'd say abusive. He's an alcoholic. And my experience as a son in a house with an alcoholic father who was resentful of his life and whatever, was that we'd spend most of our time with mom. And when he came home, we'd all try to quickly retreat to our rooms so that we didn't have to end up in any situations of, you know, stress or drama. What that at an early age did for me was start my thinking of what a ideal parenting family situation was, I'm air quoting right now, supposed to look like. So for me, one day after my dad came in from work in his normal, you know, Friday night, it was a Friday night coming home. And after Friday, he would go out and drinking with his friends, and he'd come home and lean on the bell. He had a key, but he would just lean on the bell, which meant he was in that mood. So somebody had to go open the door. So came in, leaned on the bell. We all retreated to our rooms quickly to act like we were sleeping so that we didn't have to be a part of this conversation or whatever mood he was in. And this day he thought he wanted to fight, actually. So he came in mad that his dinner wasn't however it was, and, you know, yelling around and throwing things. And my older brother, being the older brother and feeling like he needed to, you know, be the protector of the family, you know, came out and got in the middle of it and ended up getting, you know, hit. So my father smacked him or something. That was the last straw for us. He went to work the next day. When he came home, we had moved. Mom's like, all right, we're out. From that moment on, it became a story of my mother being mother and father, trying to raise all these kids that she had. At the time, it was just the four of us. My younger sister had not been born, so she was born later. But it ended up being shortly thereafter, my mom, the four of us, and, you know, five counting being pregnant, and trying to survive through all of that. And all of that for me became, when I get married, or if I ever have a family, what is not going to happen is there's not going to be a 20 year plus year later conversation of any of my kids saying, well, my dad wasn't around, my dad didn't provide, my dad didn't set an example, my dad was not involved in my life. Because, you know, as much as I've gone through in my life, most of my bigger accomplishments, my dad was not around to see or be a part of. So with this life doesn't come with an instruction book note here. So you can do whatever you want to do. You can be there. You can set examples and all this, but you're still, as the Serenity Prayer sort of says, not necessarily in control of the outcome. So I pursued that with a passion, thinking I'm going to create the absolute ideal situation in a household with a family, wife, kids, or whatever. And everything's going to be perfect because of that, because I'm doing everything right. I'm going to, you know, finish high school, go to college, get a good job, I didn't drink or smoke or any of those things going through high school and college. You know, I'll drink socially now a little, but you know, in terms of the family, it's like my kids never saw me with a beer or drinking or drunk or any of the things that I saw on a regular basis of my dad coming home drunk. Actually, you know, would say, hey, you want to try this? He would, you know, offer us a beer when we were, I had to be five. And I'm like, oh no, that doesn't taste like anything I would ever want. So, you know, I started off on the exact extreme opposite of never drink, never smoke, never whatever, never let them see you sweat. Just get through all of this, like step over, you know, whatever situation is there. Cause I had a very clear vision of what I thought life was supposed to be. And fast forward into adulthood and, you know, starting a family, you don't know what outside environments, what physical, psychological, or whatever challenges you may have. And you like myself, and especially my wife, who likes things in order. She likes order. She likes things to happen in the way that are, I always say, don't use the N word. In our house, the N word is normal. You know, folks want to say, this is what normally happens. This is what's supposed to happen. The supposed to and normals are what, you know, often put you in a space where you feel like, you know, something is, you know, failing. And I'll get to that in a minute. But through all of my story and through everything that I've gone through, it you know, I thought that the formula was show up, be present, set good examples, don't do any of the things that you don't want your kids to do. And for a while that seemed like it was working until we got into probably freshman year of high school with my older son. And we started to notice some changes in what was happening. Cause prior to that, we had, you know, basically two straight A students who were, you know, elite athletes. Kyle at 14 was being invited to the Olympic Training Center for swimming. And on a watch list. So we said, this is the path. We're doing well. We got our household, the kids in school, you know, they're excelling. They're excelling in their extracurricular things. But through all that, and, you know, and again, us being there every step of the way, especially me going to basketball games, I actually coached their basketball teams and he was on the sideline for all the meets and all the practices of Kelly and I up 4 o'clock in the morning, driving in the swim practice. And when they played football for a while and taking them to football and being part of the parent groups and support groups and getting them coaches when they needed them. And when they wanted to go to sports camps, going to sports camps and all the things that I didn't have, especially with my father. Like my mom tried to do what she could do. But, you know, part of it was financial. Part of it was just an inability being mom, not dad, to show some of those examples. So for me, my examples were all people in the neighborhood. And for the most part, the people in the neighborhood weren't people that I wanted to aspire to be like. So the people in the neighborhood actually were reverse father images for me. So the people in the neighborhood were, you know, Daryl the wino and, you know, the drug dealers and so forth that lived in my neighborhood that I stepped over every day to get to school. So for me, it was always like, oh, here are all the things that I will never be like and I will never see in my life again from the moment I leave this neighborhood and go to school. So, you know, for me being a father and trying to figure all of this out, I thought we did it all right, right? And I'm sure a lot of people on this phone can attest to, like, what did I do wrong? And I didn't do anything to deserve this. And, you know, what I'll say from my experience is, for the most part, that is probably true. You're probably right. Like, no, you don't deserve it. No, this is not necessarily a result of anything that you've done. But that said, you know, again, one, life doesn't come with an instruction book. And two, there are certain things that we are just unable to control. So what we have to do then is try to figure out how we show up in the midst of all the crazy. It started with a lot of like, what did we do wrong? Why is this happening to us? And how can we control this? If your personality is, sorry, Kelly, but I'll use Kelly as an example. If your personality is like Kelly's, which is, I need life to happen on my terms. I have a calendar. It's color coded. This is the way the day is supposed to go, and stretching out a little further. This is how this week is supposed to go. This is where, you're supposed to show up in life in a certain way. This is how high school is supposed to be. You're supposed to go to school, do your work, join some clubs, excel. You have resources. You're, you know, basically, you know, a tick below genius level intelligence. None of this should be hard. There shouldn't be any struggle. You're supposed to come home with your grades. You're supposed to do what we are expecting. As you know, there's a cultural thing with, you know, at the risk of, you know, alienating anybody on the call, but there's a cultural thing with Black families and parents of, there are certain things you don't do in the Black household. Let's just say that, right? Some of the stuff that comes with being reasonably successful is that you end up in different environments and different scenarios than what we had. Like our parents, we had the be home before the lights come on, and certain ways you would never think to talk to your parents that were not part of our community. But also what was not part of our community, which is something that sort of happened over time, is that, you know, we grew up in a spare the rod, spoil the child sort of mentality, old school, like, you get spankings and all those things. Well, obviously that's not politically acceptable these days. And, you know, the examples that we had as parents were like, you would never, I wish I would say something like, I say something to my mother, say something back. If I had something to say, it had better been like under my breath, mumbling as I went to my room, moving in the other direction. It definitely wouldn't have been directly to my mom's face, like, no, I'm not going to do that. For example, what we started to deal with the older one is, no, you can't go out. But why? Because it's X, Y, Z. It's 10 o'clock. It's a weekday. We don't want you going out. Go to your room. And then he just goes anyway. Like, what? What is that? Like, that is in a Black family, that would have my... Even my mom, who was, you know, small, would have snatched me up just as quick. I tried to just not do what my parents told me. Oh, my God. That would be just so, that, I mean, I can't even imagine unless I was ready to move out at that minute, at that very moment, you know, with probably a lump on my head from the frying pan she would have hit me with. But, you know, trying to approach this thing differently, you know, as culture and life has changed and things are politically acceptable or not acceptable. And trying to do this in a certain way, because, you know, we have sort of taken to the, this is already a change for us to start with, is trying to treat them as people and not just kids. Like, I'm going to treat you, give you a certain level of respect, treat you as a person, allow you to say what you need to say, obviously not in a disrespectful way, but allow you to get your thoughts out. And then still parent, you know, and it's been really hard again, to, especially when with young men, because, you know, young men, especially young, you know, young Black boys, at a certain point, they start feeling themselves and they want to puff up. And my Baltimore reaction would have been snap somebody up in the chest. And like, I know. And this is funny. This is one of the things I was going to say, as I was looking at what I was going to do today, I had a list of quotes that I did from my last talk. And one of them was, and I call these are chapters for the book that I will eventually write. One of the titles was, Boy, Have You Lost Your Mind? There are many days that one has popped out. And what that becomes is a struggle between me and my Baltimore self going, do not let Baltimore Keith out. Please don't do it. Just don't do it. Because the one time that happened, which is one of the stories I'll tell you before I start to, you know, sort of get some perspective, because I want to hear from some of you guys, is after a certain point of doing everything you think that you can do correctly and still seeing it go in a way that you didn't plan on or are not in control of, you know, you start to think, well, maybe I go back to the other way. My child, somewhere about, maybe it's 2 years ago, I mean, Kelly can correct me for exact dates, but in his experience, as we say, going to high school and starting down this path that we didn't, you know, that has sort of put us into this story, which is how we ended up even ideating and creating this space that we're in, this safe space for us to talk, is we started this high school thing and he started going left, hanging out with people that we didn't, you know and so forth, and starting to get into some things. And we started noticing some habits, and we did everything the, you know, middle class society thing suggests. Hey, you need to have an intervention, go to counseling, do family counseling, try this, talk to them, do all these things. Don't, you know, you can't spank your kids. You can't, you know, all those things. We're trying to follow that. Well, it got to a point where we got a call. Kelly was out. I can't remember if she was out of town or whatever. I get a call from his school, and you know, he's just into 10th grade. The principal calls me because they have my son in the office because they caught him in the bathroom vaping, which is an awful thing that, you know, I know a lot of us and, you know, these teenagers are doing some stuff and it's awful. And again, for me, it's such a slap in the face of, I've spent so many years as a father trying not to ever do anything from an example of, it's not about what you tell them, it's about what you show them. So me never showing you, I don't smoke, definitely don't smoke weed, don't drink in front of you, hadn't drank, you know, literally didn't drink at all. If you saw me with a beer, everybody in the room would stop and go, what the, what's Keith doing with a beer? To the point where when I go out with my friends, if I went to a bar, everybody wanted to ride with me and we would go to a bar and they would order me milk because that's, you know, that's what guys do. Like, yeah, we'll have Hennessy and Coke. And this girl will have a milk. That's the example I was showing him. Like, you can be part of everything. You can still, you know, be active in life and have friends or whatever, and still be, choose what activities that you, you know, want to be involved in. All of that. And he often over his years before, you know, teenager, saying, using it as almost a weapon to taunt folks with, to say, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I'm going to be like my dad. I wouldn't drink. I wouldn't smoke. And then we ended up at this space where I'm getting a call from the school of him vaping. I go in, talk to, luckily, the security guard was a black guy. The assistant principal was a black guy. He was with two other kids who were, you know, not black. But the community in this school of, you know, African-Americans is so small that they're trying to, you know, help us all succeed. They're like, look, don't be a statistic here. It's only 10 black people here. You can't be that guy. So we had that conversation. We sat in the office with security. So they ended up suspending him. We come home, you know, for a couple of days. We come home and literally within, you know, an hour of him getting home, and, you know, I'm waiting to have the big talk. I had part of it on the way home, the disappointment. I can't believe this, blah, blah, blah. I get home and this boy is thinking he's going to bounce out, thinking the suspension was a reason for him to get out and go hang with his friends, the same ones that he just got in trouble with. And what that ended up turning into is he's trying to leave because he's gotten these friends that Kelly and I have sort of nicknamed jump out boys, who will just show up in a car in front of the house. And just in 10 seconds, he'll just zoom past you, jump in a car and, you know, disappear before you can, you know, sort of tell him not to go or chase him or whatever. This turns into he's trying to get out of the house. And I'm so over it at this moment. And what he doesn't realize is I'm struggling with every ounce of my being not to just totally lose it and go straight Baltimore Keith here. And I'm going, I don't believe you're really trying to get out of here and go. Like, what is it that's going on? Is this, you know, I'm trying to use all of the tools and techniques that I've gotten from therapy and, you know, thinking about what addiction looks like and using my experience from Baltimore of how I understand that, you know, certain times when folks have an inability to deal with impulses and addiction, that it's not the person you're talking to at that time. In that moment, you're actually dealing with the actual thing. So I'm actually talking to addiction. I'm not talking to the monster addiction, whatever that is, if it's vaping. And at this point, it had gotten to weed. And we were worried that it was something else. He's trying to leave the house. He just got suspended. In my household, I'd have been punished for the rest of my life. I'm like, I imagine I couldn't get a C without being, you know, punished and having a long conversation about what is this? This young man has just gotten suspended. I'm like, suspended? Out of Walt Whitman High School in Bethesda, Maryland? Are you crazy? Boy, have you lost your mind. And he's trying to go out. And in fact, he's gonna just walk past me and go out. And it became a thing where he literally reached out and put his hands on my chest. And I looked at him and my soul just stepped out of my body and said, kill this fool. And my Bethesda self was like, do not do it, do not do it, do not do it. So at this time, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go talk to your friend. Like, I'm going to his house. I'm gonna talk to his parents, because clearly, There must not be a parent that's aware that their child is popping out of school, smoking and vaping for the person that asks is, yes, there is vaping of alcohols. Also, folks also do, and I throw this in a whole category together because they use that synthetic weed as well in liquids. So it could be tobacco in it, it could be weed in it, it could be who knows. And as we know right now, just like with smoking, you really find out like 10 years later what real side effects come from these things. They don't know what this stuff's gonna do to you. You've seen the commercials where they talk about the various metals that are in vaping and all this. So that's the sidebar informational piece. So this child has literally put his hands on me, which, you know, Black people, Baltimore people, anybody that grew up in the ghetto with a mother, with an African-American mother, or anybody culturally that understands where I'm coming from here, that's a deficit. I would have been picking up my teeth from the floor. I can't imagine if I would ever try to literally put my hands on my parent. We actually almost had a fight. And in that moment, I said, I will never, ever raise my hands to you know, put my hand on a child. And again, in this instance, it was me trying to restrain them, him trying to get out of here. And I was like, I can't believe this is really happening. Like, where am I? I'm in Twilight Zone right now. What I realized is, okay, here's the crossroads where I'm at. Like, this thing has gotten to a point where all of the experiences, all of my life experiences, all the experiences with him, all of my church, all of my counseling is giving me an opportunity here to make a decision. Like, my decision in that moment was, what legacy do I want to have here? Like, do I want to have a child that I say, do I love my child more than I am determined to change who he is right now and what he's been, you know, how he's appearing and showing up in his life right now? And if I do love my child more than I am determined to try to control him, then how do I walk this path where I'm not condoning anything he's doing? I'm not stepping away from my sort of intentions and the impact I wanted to have in his life. But at the same point, I'm not putting myself in a space where I'm so emotionally vulnerable and so raw and angry that it could turn into what this is about to turn into right in this moment. So he actually ended up running. He didn't get up. He got up and ran out of the house. He called, you know, Kelly, and it was this whole big thing. And Kelly didn't know what was going on. He's hysterical because at this point, he's seen in my face the everything that is built up. And I probably look like a maniac. He was like, oh my God, my dad is crazy. Now for me, growing up in Baltimore, I never ever had to get that far. I had to do is my dad would give me a look. Well, my mom, it's really my mom, because, you know, I was probably 5 or 6. I can remember, but I can't really remember. But I remember this little lady, my mom, looking at me and giving me a look that made me, you know, whatever crazy thought I had at the moment, I'm like, well, I ain't gonna do that because she's crazy. I'm just gonna go in my room and mumble. That was the extent of it. I'd go in my room, and most I would slam a door. And for any of you that's had that happen with a kid, when you hear that, I know you're not slamming doors in my house. So, you know, one of the lessons that I did get from that in growing up is that, you know, with my kids starting to slam doors and lock doors, I'm like, oh, we don't do that. You don't get a locked door. My son had half a summer where he didn't have a door in his room. I went in and just took the door off the hinges and took him and put it in the basement. So I'm like, well, until you learn how to be a person in this house, you won't have a door. You don't pay for anything around here, for all of my parents who have had that conversation. So getting to the serenity prayer thing. So I gave you all that to give you some background and a little tidbit. I don't even have to go through the thing. I was going to read some of the entries of some of the, where he's disappeared, where he didn't come back, where we found, you know, empty alcohol bottles in his room, or where we found like vaping things from him smoking or whatever. Now, in the meantime, we have another son who we're trying to still show up as a family, give him guidance and love, and try not to let this all spill over on him. But like, how do you not, in a certain way, let some of it spill over? Because any little thing that happens now, we're immediately like, oh no, I'm not letting this happen again. I remember when your brother was, you know, out 10 minutes later than he was supposed to be, and he was off, you know, smoking weed. So, you know, so now as a younger kid, you're getting it twice as hard. So it's it's also hard there to try to stay open-minded, stay on your ground, still try to set an example and understand that you are not the sum of your, you're not your environment necessarily. Because, you know, if I use myself as a example, like I grew up and all these things were happening around me and I took a different path. My brother, you know, at a certain point, you know, did drugs and all of this, everything else that everybody else in the hood did. Because same environment, same parents, same situation, but you still have a choice. So what I wonder, you know, as I think about this and, you know, think about my mom, what she had to deal with, if she maybe had some of these thoughts, like, what is this my fault? Is this because I am in this situation? Is it because of, you know, where we've had to live based on, you know, what I was doing to survive and how am I affecting my kids? But I see somebody saying what I'm thinking as well. Yes, nature versus nurture. Is that same environment, same everything, you still can't control the results. You know, what you can do is show up, what you can do is talk to your kids, what you can do is try to, you know, set an example and all those things. And it still doesn't mean it's going to work. I mean, it's your kids are their own people. And especially once you get to a certain age, they're going to be who they're going to be. So at this point now, and part of, you know, one of the reasons that Kelly named this what she named it is, we are taking this path and we are on this whole journey of how do you continue to love your kids, show up in their lives, but understand that you can't control who and how they react to certain things. All you can do is keep on showing up, keep on setting examples, keep letting them know what your thoughts and how you feel about certain things. But at the same time, just like when you're on a plane, one of the things they say, if the plane is to go down, even if you have a small child, what's the thing they say? Put on your mask first before you can put on theirs. So like if you're not taking care of yourself, then you can't really take care of them no matter how much you want to. And, you know, as parents, we know we would do anything for our kids. Like, you know, if it's a bus coming and, you know, it's got to hit one of us, I'm like, okay, I've been here longer than you. As long as you want to take care, you got to take care of your family because I'm taking this bus, right? But what we've really got to, and where I've sort of gotten to with him is, and it often, I know it frustrates Kelly sometimes, and we have to talk through it, but it's like, you know, sometimes he's gotten to a space where you can stand in front of him and try to block him and, you know, when he's trying to skate out and do what he's going to do, or you can, you know, let him know how you feel about it, talk to him as a person, say, listen, I really don't think this is not how we, you know, this is not how we want to raise our kids. This is not what I think is good for you. This is how I feel about it. I'm not going to get in front of you and, you know, have a fight with you. I'm not going to do that. But I'm also not going to allow you to you know, think you can just do whatever you want and let you think it's all right. It's not all right. I want you to understand that we understand it is not all right, but we also understand that you're going to make decisions that affects your life. And, you know, what we're trying to tell you is as Kelly's mom says, you can't get the time back. You can't get the time back. And what is really hard as parents, and I know you guys are going to feel me on this, it's really hard as parents to let your child fail when you know he's going to fail by taking a certain action. I'm going to say that again. If you know your child is going to take a certain action and you know what's on the other side of that action, and you've told them, you showed them, you've discussed it with them, whatever, and they still want to take that action, sometimes you have to let them fail. And that's where I've sort of understood that part of my journey has been the struggle of it. I mean, obviously I haven't made these same types of decisions, but just like when you go to the gym, one of the ways that you grow and get bigger and get stronger is you work your muscles into failure. And then you push past that, right? What we've done is a thing that, because we've had struggles in our lives, and a lot of us as parents in different kind of ways, you have struggles, but because you have those struggles, you don't want to see this child that you brought into this earth that you love probably more than yourselves. And you don't want them to go through what you went through. Like, look, I'm going to show you, I've already done this. You don't need to do this. I'm going to tell you what's on the other side. Don't do it. Right. But the reason that you get to be, you know, the reason that Kelly is a badass executive and like, she's just a whirlwind is because she understands the work. Like, I went to college. I had to get extra jobs. I had 4 jobs at the same time because I didn't want my parents to know that pledge made me lose my scholarship. So I still had to make this work out. And for me, like I had to step over drug dealers and do this and survive with sometimes not food at night or sometimes not the proper resources, never had coaches, never had tutors, anything that cost money wasn't happening. So I'm like, we're going to give you all these resources. But at the same time, when you do that, a lot of times you create people who don't have that same hustle muscle, right? So if you don't let them fail sometimes, they're not going to ever develop, they're not going to understand that falling down doesn't mean you can't get up. Like you can fall down 9 times as long as you get up 10. So, you know, I think every time my child has gotten really close to hitting his face on the ground, no matter how upset, how disappointed, how whatever we've been in just in time to keep him from hitting his face on the ground. I'm going to stop and hopefully take some questions because I can go in a bunch of different directions, but I do want to hear from some of you all. But I think I've landed at a space where I'm like, I know that if you don't do this class, for example, we just had a graduation ceremony a week ago where he walked, but his little booklet he opened up doesn't have anything in it. Why? Because he has work he needs to do. So on the surface, it looks like he's graduating, but we know he's got to finish a couple of things for it to be official. We've told him that, we've helped him, we've given tutors, we've done all this thing. But at this point, I'm like, you know, if you don't do this, you will not have a high school diploma, right? And, you know, Kelly is, I can't imagine a world where that happens. Neither could I, but I've gotten to a space right now where I understand that he has to own this, right? And I can support him, I can be here. I'm here, I show up every day. You know, if you need me, I'm here. I show up every day, I go to work, I come home, I attend events, I talk to teachers, I do everything I need to do as a parent, I set an example. But I can't make you walk the path that I want you to walk in the inward normal world. This is what you should be doing, right? So all I can say is for the fathers and mothers that are here to, you know, obviously stick to your guns, continue to show up in your kid's life, continue to show examples and, you know, try to talk to them where you can, but understand that don't ever have the conversation that I just talked my wife out of saying I didn't do anything to deserve this or what did I do wrong, right? Versus how can I continue to show up? How can I continue to love my child through all of this? You know, as they say, as opposed to, you know, complaining about the weather, sometimes you got to dance in the rain. We've been dancing in the rain for a couple of years now, and hopefully it's going to be dry soon. So I'm going to stop for a second and see if we can take some questions. If anybody wants to ask any questions, give any comments, say amen or whatever.
Okay. So Keith, thank you for sharing. Being born and raised in Baltimore, I can really relate to what you shared. What I'd like to know, as you and Kelly journey through, is there ever a breaking point? You know, I sit back sometimes and I say to myself, I have two kids, one who is 26, my daughter, and my son is going to be 20 in November. Mm-hmm. And I sit back and I say to myself, I have worked so hard. I worked my way out of the ghetto. Mm-hmm. I went to college. Mm-hmm. I pledged a sorority. Mm-hmm. I have done some things that I didn't even think I was capable of, all of which my mother really doesn't know, right? Because she wasn't that parent. Her goal for us was get a job at the post office and I'll be happy. That was it. Yep. So what I will ask of you and Kelly, as you continue through this journey, is there ever a breaking point? I know we will stand at, my comment was, we will stand in front of a fast moving train for our kids, but sometimes our kids are the fast moving train.
Yep.
How do we get out of the way so we don't get hit, but yet still show up in love and acceptance?
Listen, we're all human on top of all this. We're parents, we can read and claim to know everything, but again, this doesn't come with any instruction book. And I can attest to, you know, watching Kelly have a moment, and Kelly can attest to watching me have a moment where we just lose it, like just either in a way that we just have to just let it all go, just you know, go in a room and cry, or where you have to just scream and yell and, you know, get your stuff out of there. And it's going to happen because we are all human and you're going to have moments like that. But what you have to do then is just be able to get it back together, right? So I try to limit those. Because I'm like an iron in terms of how my emotions run. It takes me a while to really get heated up So, you know, as opposed to snapping to a quick moment where I just, you know, as my mom used to say, where I just zap out. I'm not going to just zap out on a short, you know, a reaction to something really quickly. It takes a while to build up for me, but then, you know, that makes it worse because then it's a long simmering thing. But what I will say is, yes, we all human. You're going to have moments where you're not in control of it. You got emotions too. And you're going to have to blow off some steam. Maybe that's, if you feel that and you see it coming, maybe you find whatever you find to relax yourself. Maybe it's meditation. Maybe you got to go for a walk. Maybe you got to, like, you know what? I got to leave for a minute. I'll be back. Sometimes you just got to walk away from it and then regroup and come back later, you know, sort of fortified. Somebody said something about radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is exactly what this is. You do what you do, you show up, you do the best you can do, you set an example, and then you work through it and figure it out. So that's the best advice I can give you.
Keith, I do have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
With your younger son, mm-hmm. and I know you all have spoken a great deal about your older son. Mm-hmm. How do you parent the two boys differently based on the challenges with your older son? And have you pivoted or change your course of parenting as you see what's going on with your older son versus your younger son?
Yeah, that's definitely a delicate, you know, calculus of trying to parent differently. And trust me, it is a struggle to not go to the, I've seen this before, so this is how I'm going to react to this. And whenever I really find myself doing it in a way that's unfair, I try to catch it. Same thing with Kelly is, you know, some things happen and you have to be careful too, because, you know, as you go through this and, you know, again, us not knowing and not having an instruction book here, certain little signs that people warn you, it's like, hey, just pay attention to the little things, pay attention to changes, pay attention to that. Some of those things are a result of just growing up and going into teenage years and, you know, all of those changes that normally happen, your personality changes, your voice changes, the things you want to do change, all of those things. A lot of those normal things look abnormal after you've had a struggle with a previous child where you were saying, okay, I wish I had noticed at this time that this was happening. Why didn't I know that, you know, he was, I don't know, sneaking out of the house to go smoke weed with whatever. Why didn't I understand or why didn't I see this stuff coming? Is because you can't predict it coming is the real answer to that. So, you know, if it's some obvious things, yeah, you definitely, you're a parent. You're supposed to be you're supposed to be a parent. You're supposed to be an example. You're supposed to be the police. You're supposed to be an investigative force. So you have to do that. But at the same time, you have to just keep an eye on it. And, you know, hopefully if you are in a two parent household, which is good, you can sort of check each other on it, check in with each other and make sure that, you know, how you're reacting is that the punishment is fitting the crime or that your reaction fit the actual person, because two people in the same situation, same everything, and they will turn out totally differently. So We try to keep that in mind as we look at our kids. But key to this is you also have to look out for unspoken things, which is right now what Kelly is dealing with. Christopher is, as much as he likes to say nothing's wrong, everybody needs counseling except me. That's his thing. Why do I need counseling? I'm not doing anything. I don't have any issues. I'm not, you know, I'm not screaming at Kyle, or I'm not Kyle. I'm not running out of the house. I'm not doing drugs. But, you know, as a younger teenager, he's trying to figure out life too. And he's trying to figure out how he can, you know, be heard. You know, we try to talk to him as much as we can. I would say that's really key. Always talk to your kids, talk to them as much as you can, but talk to them sometimes without your normal inclination of trying to fix things. Just like listen more than you talk, get a conversation going, but do more listening than talking. Don't immediately jump in and your kids say something, you immediately jump in and try to fix it, but more so listening. And what we think he's currently dealing with is not understanding or not knowing really how to deal with everything that's sort of been happening over this past couple of years. And we are trying to figure out how we have conversations to really hear where he is, and then also not react in ways that are 100% based on how our previous, well, how our older child reacted and behaved, and make it, try to still make it specific to him without ignoring any key, you know, signs and changes that could be important.
Hey, Keith. Thank you for sharing. Yes, I really appreciate everything that you guys are doing. And, you know, obviously it's a long road. One of the things I'm interested in is you talked about listening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of as your kids are getting older, I assume that many struggle with the impatience of figuring out how to infuse them with as much information as you can get into their heads while they're there.
Yep.
But then you are not doing the listening. And for me, I end up going to a mathematical place, like, you know, okay, so I need a ratio, you know, 2/3 of the conversations need to be meaningful and 1/3 can be whatever nonsense they want to talk about or whatever it is. And I'm just interested to hear how you're navigating that. In particular, obviously with your youngest, where you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I make sure that I'm hearing so that I know of signs, or just so I can be supportive of what he's interested in, versus how much do I feel like I need to infuse with the information? How are you navigating just dealing with those day-to-day interactions and conversations so you're not being like me and the one who's always trying to lecture and, listen, and infuse?
You gotta hear yourself too. You know, you gotta be in a space where you're, you know, listen to the conversation from outside of yourself, which sounds crazy, but it really is. Sometimes I just hear myself saying something like, okay, Keith, just stop for a minute. Let them talk. This current iteration where, you know, just going through the radical acceptance and trying to be more of a outlet so that they can get some stuff out, and especially with my younger son, who clearly is internalizing a lot of things that we're not even considering. In his journey, like his journey is unfairly being affected by all of this. Like he doesn't get to just have the normal journey of a, you know, 12 to 16 year old, because he's dealing with all of the drama from, you know, what's going on with his older brother, which is a lot of times like an icy environment in the house. Like mom's in a bad mood because, you know, the older son has done something crazy. And then she doesn't, you know, she's not able to process it or mad. It's like, I'm just going to go to bed. So, or I'm going to go somewhere and go for a ride or whatever that is. Or same thing with me. But what that does is then take you out of his life too, for that moment in time. Right. So sometimes, you know, sometimes you, like I said, you have to take care of yourself so that you can show up in the proper way. So it's a balance of knowing when you can, you know, sort of step out, take care of yourself so you can come back and show up properly. Because sometimes just showing up, but showing up in a way that's not helpful is just as bad as not being there. So I try to figure it out. And, you know, there's no rule book. You just got to keep showing up and try to be the best you can be. You can't control whatever other people are doing. You can just control how you show up in those situations. So that's sort of how I think about it.
I have one quick question. What can we as wives do to help, you know, in this difficult time for our husbands like you that show up? I was thinking about my husband in those boy, have you lost your mind moments where I realize I may be the one encouraging and inviting his version of Baltimore Keith, which is not helpful because I feel like the situation warrants it. So what are one or two things that we as wives can do to help you, our men, in those difficult situations?
That's a good question. And I appreciate that. I mean, I have, listen, women, you don't know, you know, as a Black man and all of this stuff that comes with that and all of the societal expectations, and then just the stuff that we deal with on a regular basis that we just have to deal with, right? Just like just driving home and not getting shot by the police, for example, for, you know, I take my car, a nice car, in the wrong neighborhood, I might not come home, right? That's real. And then you take this, having this feeling of you have to be the protector and solve the problems of the family. Like, you're the man here. Like, how can you let this happen? You don't understand what you guys have to understand is it's a heavy weight that comes along with it from our side of this is a result of your losing control, or you're not having control of the ship here. You don't have control of the ship. Your son is wilding out. What are you going to do? Right? That can come across in a spoken way, can come across in an unspoken way. As a woman, you may have to say, I can't believe you did that, and you could talk through this. I don't know what a real answer to that. I'll just say, just be careful and understand that there's a lot that, you know, with, especially with Black men, a lot of baggage that's packed up in there from just our life experiences that you can easily have unpacked and not in a way that you want to. Because at the end of the day, most of us are upset or bothered or stressed because we want our kids to, we want the best for them. Kelly, go ahead.
Keith, you have been such, like, just so informative, inspirational, your transparency, everything. It's just been a real blessing to all of us. And we know that, you know, the struggle continues, and we thank you for just being willing to walk us through it and give us some tips that have worked for you. So I'm going to go ahead and close us out with prayer. We do appreciate everybody taking the time to join us, and we look forward to seeing you next week as well. Lord, we come to you today giving thanks for all of the men in our children's lives. Black men have faced numerous challenges and obstacles throughout the years, yet you, O Lord, have created them with resilience, with strength, with brilliance, with savvy, and with wisdom. You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Today, Lord, we firstly come to you on behalf of the Lawson family. You said, having done all, stand. We are standing right now asking for you to place your supernatural hand on their household. Kelly and Keith have stated, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So, Lord, today we ask that you do a new thing, God, and intervene in such a way that the entire household is transformed. Transform it so that it doesn't look the same. It doesn't operate the same. So we lift up Keith and Kelly today, Lord. We ask that you cover them, be a fence around their household, around their children. Lord, you are our dwelling place. You are our shelter. Pour out your blessings and your love, oh God. And Lord, we thank you today, and may you add a blessing to the reading of your word. And we look forward to all of the testimonies of success. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Kelly.
I'm Kelly Richardson Lawson, and you've been listening to the Sunrise Project podcast. You can follow Sunrise wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, open your podcast app and follow this show. Join us next week for another gathering of support. Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental wellness challenges, contact your doctor, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or both. You can reach NAMI's helpline at 800-950-6264, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or email at info@nami.org. Volunteers are working to answer questions, offer support, and provide practical next steps.